It is here. The 2024 NBA playoffs. I tell you one thing, we've got some first round matchups that are going to be exciting, not just on the Western Conference, but also in the Eastern Conference as well. And certainly we've got some marquee matchups, marquee players. And to talk all about it, let's welcome him back to the program. He is the host of the No Ceilings NBA Deep Dives podcast, and he's also the editor-in-chief and writer for No Ceilings NBA, and he's the co-host of the Kings Weekly podcast. Always knowledgeable about the NBA, and hey, he's back on to talk the first-round NBA playoff matchups, Nick Agar-Johnson. Hey, Nick, welcome back to the program, my man.
Ed, thanks so much for having me back on the show. Always a great time to talk basketball, and the playoffs are here. So there's certainly a lot to talk about and a lot to dive into, and excited to get into all of it with you now.
Absolutely. And again, as always, thank you so much, sir, for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. So let's start off on the Eastern Conference. The number one seed, I should say, Boston Celtics, going up against the eighth seed, Miami Heat. We know about the history with the Celtics and the Heat, especially last year in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Heat won in a surprising seven-game series. This time around, things are different. Miami hampered with injuries, no Terry Rozier. Jimmy Butler most likely is going to miss this series. But, hey, Boston, they've got Jason Tatum. They've got Jaylen Brown. They've got Kristaps Porzingis. Drew Holiday, Al Horford, they've got a lot of depth coming from that bench, Derek White. So give me your thoughts on the series with Boston against Miami.
Yeah, so starting on the Miami side of things, you know, they fought their way through the play-in to make it here. And, you know, this Miami Heat team has sort of made a name for itself over the years, but over the last few years in particular of always sort of outperforming their playoff expectations. You know, this is a team that has made it to the finals recently when pretty much nobody expected them to be the team playing Denver in the finals last year. So, you know, the Heat, underdog is not the right way to refer to this team, just given how successful they've been. But certainly they have a history of, you know, outperforming expectations. That being said, I mean, especially with the Jimmy Butler and Terry Rozier injuries that you mentioned, you know, in addition to Josh Richardson being out for the year, Duncan Robinson potentially, you know, having some injury concerns as the series goes on. This is a Heat team that has an uphill climb anyway, just given their injury situation. But playing against a team like this year's Boston Celtics, who, I mean, broke records for best offensive rating in league history, you know, close to a historic net rating, just, again, you know, one of the top teams, not just, you know, obviously the best team record-wise in the NBA this year in the Boston Celtics, but a team that's had historic level numbers in terms of, you know, what they've been able to do on both ends of the floor. You know, particularly the offense has been spectacular, but their defense was top three in the league as well. This is an absolute juggernaut of a Celtics team. I mean, you mentioned some of the stars up top, you know, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Drew Holiday, Kristaps Porzingis. You know, they have Derek White as well, who's, I think, one of the more underrated players in the NBA. This is an exceptionally strong and exceptionally deep Celtics team. And, you know, Miami has a history of overcoming barriers that people didn't expect them to overcome. So it's hard to write them off in the series, but this is just such a spectacular Celtics team that even if Miami was fully healthy, I think this would be a bit of an uphill climb. And since they're not, I think that this is going to be a very tough battle for Miami to try and pull off against the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, it is going to be tough. I mean, we know that, I mean, Jimmy Butler, right? I mean, playoff Jimmy Buckets. This is his time. This is his, whenever Jimmy Butler's involved in the playoffs, he always shines bright. But the injuries have got him down in Miami. You know, they're going to be, as you said, it's going to be an uphill battle for them. So, all right, give me the verdict now. Who wins the series and how many games and why?
I'm going to say Boston in five. I think that, you know, again, all the injuries make this tougher for Miami than it would have been anyway. I find it hard to count that team out from at least taking one game. I don't think that Miami will let this be a sweep, but outside of that, I mean, again, this is just such a historic level Celtics team, and I don't see them dropping this opening series. I think it's probably more likely for it to be a Boston sweep than for it to go to six or seven games. Again, it's hard to count out this Miami team given their history, but with Jimmy Butler out and with the Celtics juggernaut being as strong as it is, I would be surprised if this series goes more than five games.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. I mean, Boston's been on their A game this whole season. I mean, they ran shop. They were wreaked havoc, I should say, during the regular season, and it looks it could possibly be that way in this postseason run. All right, let's move over now to our other Eastern Conference matchup. We have the 4th seed Cleveland Cavaliers going up against the 5th seed Orlando Magic. So for Orlando, you talk about a surprise of a year. Jamal Mosley in strong consideration for this year's Coach of the Year honors. And how about the talent that they have on that roster with the likes of Jalen Suggs, also Franz Wagner, and, of course, Paolo Banchero, who is one of the rising stars and is expected to be one of the superstars in the NBA for the next decade and a half. And then Cleveland, right? Jared Allen, Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Isaac Okoro, also CeeDee Osman, and of course Donovan Mitchell. Give me your thoughts on the Cleveland and Orlando series.
This, I think, will be one of the most fun series of the first round. These are two teams that, certainly in Orlando's case, one of the youngest teams in this playoff field and absolutely a team on the rise. I mean, you mentioned Jamal Mosley, who's done a spectacular job as coach for this team, definitely in the running for Coach of the Year in my mind. And with this Orlando team, it's very interesting in that, you know, they have one of the future superstars of the league in Paolo Banchero running the offense, but really this is a defense-first team. I mean, they had the second-best defensive rating in basketball this past season, and, you know, they only had a sort of middle-of-the-pack net rating, but really most of their success was driven by how incredible they were on the defensive end of the floor. I mean, Jalen Suggs has become one of the best young guard defenders in the NBA. Franz Wagner is an exceptionally versatile defender at his size and with his mobility. And, you know, in the paint, I mean, the combination between Wendell Carter Jr., Goga Bitadze, and Jonathan Isaac, they just absolutely locked down the paint defensively all season. So this is a team on the rise for sure, and certainly it seems a little bit earlier than expected for them to be, you know, the 5th seed already and making a real playoff push. But this is a team that I think their future is so bright, and, you know, they have a lot of developmental minutes to continue to dish out to their young players. I think this team will continue to get better and better and better. And, you know, again, they're a bit ahead of schedule, but their defense is good enough that I think they stand a real chance in pretty much any first-round series. And this Cavaliers matchup is a very interesting one for Orlando. Cleveland has had a fascinating season. You know, starting from January 1st right up until the All-Star break, they lost three games total. They were absolutely spectacular as the calendar year turned, but after the All-Star break, this was a below 500 team. I mean, this was a team that really struggled to get things together after that All-Star break. And so it'll be fascinating to see sort of which version of the Cleveland Cavaliers shows up, because if it's the version that, you know, the version of the Cavaliers that we saw sort of around January when they started getting back players from injury. I mean, Evan Mobley missed a huge chunk of the season. Darius Garland missed a huge chunk of the season. You know, that sort of middle stretch of the year, Donovan Mitchell also missed a lot of time too, but that middle stretch of the year, they were dominant. They were one of, if not the best team in basketball in the months of January and February. And since the All-Star break, they've been not a playoff caliber team, simply put. And it'll be fascinating to see, again, which version of the Cleveland Cavaliers comes to play. But if they don't bring the best version of themselves, this young Magic team definitely has it in them to surprise people and, you know, potentially take a series a lot earlier than people were expecting after them making the playoffs as a 5th seed a bit earlier than I think most people were expecting.
All right, I've got to get the verdict now. Who wins in how many games and why?
Ooh. This is a really tough one. I think I'm going to go with Cleveland in 7. I think that between the, you know, experience of Donovan Mitchell as the lead guy, I think he's clearly got a lot more of that sort of experience than Paolo Banchero as the lead guy on the other side. I think that ultimately this Cleveland team is not quite the team that they were in January and February, but also definitely not the team that they were in March and April. I think they're somewhere between those two sort of extremes, and again, I think this is going to be a close series. I think it might end up being one of the closest series of the first round, but ultimately, I'm going to go with Cleveland in seven here. I think their playoff experience is going to be enough to carry them over the line in what I think will be, again, one of the most fun matchups in this first round.
All right, let's move over now to we have the third seed Milwaukee Bucks going up against the sixth seed Indiana Pacers. So for Milwaukee, there'll be no Giannis Antetokounmpo at least for several games, depending on how long this series will stretch. However, Milwaukee, they've got Brooke Lopez, Bobby Portis, who most likely is going to be a candidate for this year's Sixth Man of the Year Award. You've got Pat Connaughton, and you've also got a guy by the name of Damian Lillard. I mean, whenever it's the playoffs, Dame time comes alive. And for the Indiana Pacers, I mean, Miles Turner, one of the best defenders in the league, and also Pascal Siakam, and Tyrese Halliburton. Yannick, you know about Tyrese very well. Give me your thoughts on Bucks and Pacers in this first-round matchup.
Yes, I'm quite familiar with Tyrese Halliburton. You mentioned earlier my co-hosting duties of the Kings Weekly podcast, and certainly there is a part of me that is still at least a little bit sad that Tyrese Halliburton is not a member of the Sacramento Kings, but nothing I can do about that anymore. In terms of looking at this series, I mean, this Indiana team was, the Celtics actually ended up passing them sort of towards the end of the season, but for most of the year, this Pacers team was on an absolutely record-setting pace offensively. And, you know, that all starts with Tyrese Halliburton, as you mentioned. I mean, just absolutely running this offensive attack for Indiana. They have, you know, Rick Carlisle, credit to him, has adjusted very quickly to sort of Tyrese Halliburton ball. And the trade for Pascal Siakam in the middle of the season was huge for this team. I mean, you know, he had a bit of a slow start, but by the end of the year, he was basically the Pascal Siakam of old, of, you know, the best that we saw from him in Toronto. And certainly with Miles Turner, as you mentioned, he has long been, in my mind, one of the most underrated players in the league. You know, someone who fills a skill set that a lot of teams want in, you know, a big man who can play exceptional defense and also occasionally step out and shoot the three. He, you know, had a career year, really, in terms of his, I mean, he was slightly below his career high pace last year when he set his career high in points at 18 a game. But, you know, even still, he's been much more involved in the offense, essentially, since Tyrese Halliburton came, and has continued to be a mainstay on the defensive end. So just a really fun Pacers team that has a lot of very interesting pieces. But, you know, to talk about on the Bucks side of things, they've certainly had an interesting season, you know, what with Adrian Griffin's departure halfway through the year, Doc Rivers taking over, a lot of the struggles they had, you know, especially early on in Doc's tenure. But ultimately, I mean, this is a team that with Giannis and Dame at the forefront, it's hard to find a better 1-2 punch in the league than that. And certainly, you know, Dame has made a name for himself in many, many playoff runs as, you know, being Dame time, being exceptionally clutch in the crunch time situations. And, you know, this is a Bucks team that even though they struggled pretty handily during the sort of Doc Rivers tenure as head coach of the team, they still ended up as, you know, the third seed in the Eastern Conference for a reason. And this is a dangerous, dangerous team. And it would not surprise me at all if they make a deeper run, certainly than they have the last two seasons.
All right. Who wins? And how many games and why?
I'm going to say Milwaukee in six. I think that they have a clear talent advantage. I think that there's very little that the Pacers can do with Giannis and Dame, and certainly, you know, with Brook Lopez patrolling the paint, as you mentioned, for Milwaukee, they have a very clear defensive strength, and Bobby Portis as well is someone who I don't think Indiana really has an answer for. I think that given how spectacular the Pacers are on offense, that they'll be able to at least take a game or two off this Bucks team. But I think if I'm picking who wins the series, I'm going to have to go with Milwaukee. I don't think it's going to go seven. I definitely think, you know, six is probably the right range. I don't think this Milwaukee team is good enough to sweep. I think ultimately this will be a matchup where the Pacers give them a good challenge, but Milwaukee proceeds in, I'm going to say, six games.
All right, and then we have the last matchup in the first round of the playoffs on the Eastern Conference side, the New York Knicks going up against the Philadelphia 76ers. You talk about the battle of I-95, right? New York, Philadelphia, Knicks, 76ers. So with the Sixers, Joel Embiid, he missed 30 games in the second half of the year with the knee injury, with the torn meniscus. He came back. He's slowly getting himself back in a rhythm. Tobias Harris has been decent. Kelly Oubre got hot late in the second half of the year down the stretch. I mean, Tyrese Maxey has been a dynamo this year for the 76ers. Nicholas Batum has shown up when possible. As for the Knicks, no Julius Randle, done for the year with a shoulder injury, but Jalen Brunson has really stepped up, and Knicks fans and basketball fans really love Jalen Brunson. Oh, how about Josh Hart, Dante DiVincenzo? And on the defensive side, you've got Hartenstein, and then you've got Mitchell Robinson, who has been a massive rim protector. Give me your thoughts on New York and Philly.
So, yeah, as you mentioned, the Julius Randle injury will definitely hang over this series. But, I mean, I think with these two teams, it starts with the point guard matchup. I mean, Tyrese Maxey, as you mentioned, had a spectacular season, and he had to carry a lot of the burden for the Sixers team that it looked like for certain stretches during Joel Embiid's injury that Embiid's injury would sink the season for them. I mean, they went into a free fall, you know, in terms of their record, you know, right around the time that Embiid went out. And, you know, they closed the season ridiculously hot when Embiid came back. You know, that certainly helped things from their perspective. But, you know, even during that really awful stretch for them record-wise when Embiid was out, you know, Tyrese Maxey kept them afloat. And, again, they had to win their way into the playoffs through the play-in, right? This is not a team that made one of the top six seeds. But without Tyrese Maxey, they might have fallen out of that picture entirely. And so definitely a huge part of the credit for the Sixers season has to go to Tyrese Maxey for essentially keeping them afloat for as long as Joel Embiid was out and putting them in a position to still be in this playoff series against the Knicks. And on the flip side, Jalen Brunson, man, I mean, New York has been crying out for a point guard like Jalen Brunson basically since the Jeremy Lin days. And Jalen Brunson has, you know, gone again. His career trajectory has been incredible to watch. And at this point, you know, he's, if not on the first team All-NBA this coming offseason, he's certainly going to be on one of the first two All-NBA teams, which, you know, is spectacular for a guy who, you know, started off his career as, you know, essentially a third fiddle at best for the Dallas Mavericks. You know, he's quickly established himself as one of the premier point guards in the league for the New York Knicks, you know, made his first All-Star team this year, and it certainly seems like it will not be his last given the way he's been going. So definitely the matchup that I'm most excited about is going to be the point guard matchup in this one. But, I mean, on the flip side of things, it'll be fascinating to see this sort of matchup between the Knicks defensive first centers, you mentioned Hartenstein and Mitchell Robinson, versus, of course, Joel Embiid, who, you know, if healthy, has been the catchphrase with Joel Embiid for quite a while now. But, you know, he played just under half the season, but averaged 35 and 11 and 5.5 assists during that time. So, you know, with the Knicks trying to contain Joel Embiid, that'll be fascinating to see. And certainly the, you know, midseason trade where the Knicks picked up OG Anunoby from the Toronto Raptors, that has been a huge trade as well. The Knicks, you know, were spectacular defensively, especially after OG made his way into the lineup. So it'll be a fascinating matchup, certainly. I'm very intrigued by the point guard matchup, but there's a lot of fun up and down both of these rosters. And certainly, as you mentioned, New York and Philadelphia are two cities with a very long history of sports rivalry. So that element is certainly going to be supercharged in this one.
Absolutely. All right, I got to ask you, who wins and how many games and why?
I'm going to say Knicks in six. I think that Joel Embiid is not fully operational Death Star Joel Embiid, and that's what the Sixers would need, I think, to take this series. I think Tyrese Maxey is going to continue to put up heroic efforts for the Sixers squad, but even with Julius Randle out, I think that the Knicks, between the incredible scoring abilities of Jalen Brunson and the really, really incredible defensive lineups that this Knicks squad can throw out, especially given how the Knicks have the slowest pace in the NBA this past season, I think the Knicks are going to make this a whole series worth of grind-it-out, defense-first games. And if the Knicks can drag other teams down into the mud with them, they almost always win those battles. So I'm going to say that the Knicks managed to keep the Sixers in the mud for most of the series and take it in six games.
All right, and let's move over now to the Western Conference. If you thought the Eastern Conference had some solid matchups, boy, the Western Conference, never a dull moment. Let's start off with an interesting matchup, which I think could turn a lot of heads, and this could be the dark horse matchup in the first round. The number one seed, Oklahoma City Thunder, going up against the 8 seed, New Orleans Pelicans. So let's start with the 8 seed, New Orleans Pelicans. Zion Williamson hurt in the first play-in game against the Lakers, suffered a hamstring injury. Services, most likely he won't be around for the series against the Thunder. But New Orleans, again, a very underrated team. And I think when you have Herb Jones and Jose Alvarado, two of the most underrated defenders in the league, and then C.J. McCollum, we know what C.J. brings to the table. Brandon Ingram is an underrated talent as well. Jonas Valanciunas is a big man. He holds his own in terms of getting the rebounds and getting points in the paint. Trey Murphy is so underrated, and his talent is phenomenal as well. So New Orleans, very underrated in terms of their talent and on the defensive side. As for OKC, right, SGA, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, MVP candidate. You also got Chet Holmgren, Jalen Williams, and you've also got the other Jalen Williams. And then, again, so much talent. Lou Dort, just to name a few. And Mark Dagnall's done a great job. He's a candidate for Coach of the Year honors. Give me your thoughts on OKC and New Orleans.
So I'm going to start with New Orleans. My Kings fandom aside, you know, this New Orleans team, I mean, they just absolutely destroyed the Kings all season. So after beating the Kings 6-0 somehow in the season series, including the in-season tournament and the play-in game, you know, it's not like I wasn't expecting New Orleans to win that play-in game against the Kings. They, you know, ran roughshod over the Kings all season. But, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, this Pelicans team, in terms of expected win-loss record, so per Basketball Reference, their expected record was 52-30, which would have been sixth in the league. This is a team that, you know, had a few, you know, bad blowout losses, I think, that, you know, maybe made some parts of their record look slightly worse than it actually was. But this Pelicans team, as you mentioned, I certainly don't underrate Herb Jones' defense. I think he's one of the best defenders in professional basketball at this point. And, you know, between him, Jose Alvarado, as you mentioned, Dyson Daniels, a spectacular defender, you know, this is a team that can absolutely lock you down on the defensive end. This is one of the elite defenses in the NBA. And, you know, certainly Zion out, you know, hurts them in many departments. But, you know, the one way that it really doesn't hurt them is Zion is not quite the level of defender that Herb Jones is. Pretty much no one is the level of defender that Herb Jones is. So this team can really give Oklahoma City a lot of trouble in terms of just the ability to prevent the Thunder from scoring. But, you know, there's also the other side of this, which is Jonas Valanciunas is such a massive presence, you know, both just in terms of what he adds to the team, but also in terms of being 6'11", 260, and built like a brick house. That's not the kind of matchup that is the best situation for Chet Holmgren to go up against. On the flip side, of course, I mean, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, you know, almost certainly going to finish in the top three of MVP voting this year. You know, he is slowly recovering from injury himself, but he's, you know, back in the lineup, and the Thunder don't really have anybody down on the injury report, even though, you know, Gilgeous-Alexander is recuperating from his injuries. This is a fascinating matchup, and I think whoever won the play-in game between the Kings and the Pelicans was going to give the Oklahoma City Thunder a lot more of a challenge than you usually see in a 1-8 matchup, and certainly in terms of what the Pelicans can do defensively, I think they have a really good shot to make some noise in this series in a way that maybe a lot of people wouldn't be anticipating.
Yeah, I think this is the series that's going to shock a lot of people. I think this series is going to bring a lot of excitement. I think people really need to pay more attention to this one. So, all right, Nick, who wins and how many games and why?
I'm going to say OKC in six. I almost said OKC in seven, but I think this one's going to go six. I think that the combined firepower of SGA and Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren and the rest of this incredibly deep, incredibly versatile Thunder roster, I think that'll ultimately be too much for New Orleans to handle, given that Zion's going to be out for, if not the entirety of the series, then at least the majority of the series. I think that makes this hill a little bit too steep to climb for the Pelicans. But again, I think this is going to be one of the more fascinating 1-8 matchups. And certainly New Orleans is a team that could very well take the series if the Thunder, you know, don't take them seriously enough. And given, as you mentioned, you know, how great of a coach Mark Daigneault is, and given how committed this roster has been all season long to, you know, just to winning consistently. I mean, they're the number one seed in the Western Conference for a reason. I think ultimately they have too much for New Orleans to be able to handle. But again, this will be a fascinating matchup, and I think definitely a lot closer than people would expect when they sort of conceive of a 1-8 series.
Yeah, I think this could be the show stealer of the first round of this year's playoffs. All right, let's move over now to, we have a great matchup, the fourth seed Los Angeles Clippers going up against the fifth seed Dallas Mavericks. For the Clippers, Kawhi Leonard, we'll see his status. He's going to be game to game in terms of that knee is still bothering him. But if he's out on that court in that series, it can do work wonders for the Clippers. But L.A., aside from Kawhi, there's James Harden, there's Paul George, Russell Westbrook. You've also got Ivica Zubac, Terrence Mann. And then for the Dallas Mavericks, right, Kyrie Irving, Luka Doncic. This year, they've been able to put it together, and they were the hottest team in the league in the second half of the year. And Daniel Gafford shot so well from the field this year, it was ridiculous. Give me your thoughts on the Clippers-Mavericks.
Yeah, so starting on the Mavericks side of things, I mean, this was a team that, you know, was looking to be sort of teetering on the verge of play-in contention. And then they made, you know, mid-season trades to bring in Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington. And those two in particular have been huge for the Mavericks. And you mentioned that they were, you know, one of the hottest, if not the hottest teams in the league down the stretch. And a huge part of that is that, you know, Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington came in and entered the starting lineup immediately and made a huge difference for the Mavericks. I mean, Dallas had been desperately searching for a rim-running athletic center for years, and this year they drafted one in Derek Lively and traded for another one in Daniel Gafford, and all of a sudden their offense made a lot more sense with Luka able to throw lobs to those two guys and, you know, not just have to rely on, you know, sort of mostly pick and pop bigs like Maxi Kleber or, you know, guys who are way undersized to play the center in Dwight Powell. You know, that midseason set of trades for Dallas made this team make a whole lot more sense, especially on the offensive end. And so for that reason, it's no wonder for me that when paired with the absolute ridiculousness that was Luka Doncic this season, that the Mavericks had such a strong close to the season. But on the flip side, I mean, you mentioned Kawhi Leonard. The issue with him is always going to be health, but this season was, you know, the healthiest he's had in quite a while. I mean, he played 68 games for the first time since the 2016-2017 season, where he played 74 for San Antonio, which was right before, you know, his injured saga with San Antonio and then the trade to Toronto. But you know, again, this Clippers team, this has been a very healthy year from them, you know, particularly from their top guys. I mean, James Harden never misses any time, so that's not particularly a surprise, but Paul George played 74 games. I mean, you know, between him and Kawhi playing as much of the season as they had, this is one of the healthier years that the Clippers have had, and it showed for the vast majority of the season. I mean, they had a bit of a rough close to the season. You know, certainly late March and April was not the best time for them, but purely in terms of health, this is one of the best seasons that this version of the Clippers has had. And certainly, you know, the Kawhi injury aside, we'll have to hope that that continues for them, because this is a really fun team when they're at their best and fully healthy.
All right. Who wins in how many games and why?
This is a tough one. I think that ultimately it will be Clippers in seven. I think this will be a very close series, but I think if Kawhi is anything close to healthy, the firepower that the Clippers squad has between Paul George, Kawhi, James Harden, Russell Westbrook has been, you know, really great for the Clippers this season as well. I mean, they have a lot of guys who can do damage, and I think the Dallas team is ever so slightly too top-heavy, but ultimately, I think this will be a very close series. I expect the Clippers to emerge on top in 6 or 7, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if this Dallas team ends up turning the series on its head and upsetting this 4-5 matchup.
All right, let's move over now to another exciting series in the Western Conference. We have the third seed Minnesota Timberwolves going up against the sixth seed Phoenix Suns. So Phoenix this year, it's been trying to find their way right with their big three, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal. And they were very shaky, but they were able to win some games down the stretch, and they got a little luck on their side. New Orleans lost some key games. Also, the Lakers struggled down the stretch as well, but Phoenix was able to get that sixth seed. And as for Minnesota, Karl Anthony Towns had a knee injury, back for the postseason. Rudy Gobert has an opportunity to win another Defensive Player of the Year. Jaden McDaniels was effective this year. And we talked about, I mentioned about Paolo Banchero in Orlando being a rising star and with the potential to become a superstar. Anthony Edwards is something else, and he's a rising star on his way to become a superstar as well. And then you've got Mike Conley Jr. bringing the experience and the veteran leadership for the Timberwolves. Give me your thoughts on Minnesota and Phoenix.
So starting on the Phoenix side of things, they had a very up and down year, I think would be the best way to put it, this season. But, you know, ultimately they did seem to figure some stuff out down the stretch. You know, I do have to mention my favorite player, Isaiah Thomas, who, you know, joined the team late in the year, provided some veteran leadership, but didn't play much, probably doesn't expect to play much during the playoffs. I just wanted to mention him more than anything else. But, you know, in terms of what's actually going to be the key for this Phoenix Suns team, you know, as you mentioned, they really started to figure out more of the chemistry between their big three down the stretch. And, you know, in addition to that, I mean, Grayson Allen essentially leading the league in three-point shooting was huge for them. You know, his ability to be sort of a safety valve for them really helped the big three to figure things out. Jusuf Nurkić had a down year. You know, he's been on the decline for a couple seasons now, but he's still just such a massive presence as a rebounder and as one of the better passing big men in the league. It's a fascinating Phoenix squad, and they have the top-end talent to take this series, but I mean, this Minnesota Timberwolves squad was one of the best surprises of this season. I mean, they were the number one seed in the Western Conference for most of the season. And, you know, as you mentioned, Karl Anthony Towns, you know, his injury towards the end of the season, you know, held them back a bit down the stretch. You know, they ended up as the third seed, but still only one game behind OKC and Denver in the top two seeds. And this Timberwolves squad was the best defense in the NBA. You know, you mentioned Rudy Gobert is very likely to win what would be, I believe, his fourth Defensive Player of the Year award this coming offseason. And, I mean, you know, even with Karl Anthony Towns being injured, Naz Reid, who's one of the top contenders for Sixth Man of the Year, he stepped into the starting lineup when Kat was injured and continued to be spectacular in that role for the Timberwolves. And, you know, they had a breakout year from Nikhil Alexander Walker, who's morphed into a spectacular defender. And ultimately, as you mentioned, this team is, their future is going to be driven by just how high Anthony Edwards can climb. And given how ridiculous of a season he put together this year, given just the dramatic strides he's taken on the defensive end of the floor over the course of his young career, I don't think he's a superstar in the making anymore. I think he's just a superstar, period, full stop. And with Anthony Edwards leading the charge, with Karl Anthony Towns being one of the best shooting big men we've ever seen, with Rudy Gobert and Jaden McDaniels anchoring the defense, this is a spectacularly deep and really difficult to overcome Minnesota Timberwolves squad, and I fully expect them to have the advantage heading into the series with Phoenix.
All right, so who wins? And how many games, and why?
I'm going to say Minnesota. I'm tempted to say 5, but I'm going to say 6 to be safe. I think that this Timberwolves team, even with how good they were all season long, I think they're still a bit undersold. And even though Phoenix does have that spectacular top three, that, you know, their big three is starting to figure things out, I don't think they're anywhere near cohesive enough as a squad to overcome not just the depth of this Timberwolves team, but just spectacular defensive players up and down the roster. You know, as long as Minnesota can limit some of Phoenix's top guys, I think Phoenix is in real trouble. And given the defensive pieces that the Timberwolves have, I think that they can essentially say Kevin Durant will get his, and we'll try and contain Devin Booker and Bradley Beal and essentially force Kevin Durant and the rest of the Suns to beat us. I think that's a recipe that the Timberwolves can cook up very successfully. And again, I mean, given the star power on this Phoenix Suns squad, it's entirely possible that they could, you know, manage to just take over and beat out the Timberwolves for this series. But I think that this is the Timberwolves series to lose. I'm going to say Timberwolves in six, but I think Timberwolves in five is a strong possibility. I think they are even still an incredibly underrated team just for how spectacular their defense can be.
All right, and then we talked about defensive, some of the best defensive teams in the league this year: Oklahoma City, New Orleans, Minnesota, and then we bring up another team in the last series in the Western Conference, the Denver Nuggets. The number two seed Denver Nuggets going up against the seventh seed, the Los Angeles Lakers. So let's start off with the Lakers for a moment. You talk about a whirlwind of a year, an up and down year, just when things got going, things were going well the first half of the year. They win the in-season tournament, and then after that, things just kind of snowballed. Things went downhill, and then coming off of the All-Star break, things were starting to look on the up and up, and things just went topsy-turvy. LeBron James is LeBron James, right? I mean, LeBron doing what he does best. Anthony Davis stayed healthy for the most part. Austin Reeves, solid. Rui Hachimura was up and down. D'Angelo Russell looked really good towards the end of the season, but the Lakers did enough, get into the play-in tournament. They beat New Orleans, get the seventh seed. As for the Denver Nuggets, I mean, hey, Denver was chasing Oklahoma City and Minnesota for the number one seed in the West. Denver winds up becoming number two seed. And Jamal Murray, at the peak of his powers right now, Michael Porter Jr. has handled himself the best way he knows how with all the distractions going on with his family members. And then you've got KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Christian Brown has played nice. Peyton Watson, they don't call him Peyton Swatson for nothing, right, for his defense. And, of course, Nikola Jokic doing what he does best. Give me your thoughts on Denver and the Lakers.
So starting on the Lakers side, as you mentioned, this was a very up-and-down season for the Lakers, and there were times when it looked like they might even fall out of the play-in picture, and instead they end up emerging as the first team out of the play-in and, you know, end up with this matchup against the Nuggets in the 2-7 series. You mentioned Anthony Davis and his health. I mean, he played 76 games this season, which is something that you can't really expect from Anthony Davis. I mean, that's the most games he's played in his entire NBA career. He had a couple of 75-game seasons for the Pelicans back in those days, but this is the healthiest season we've seen from Anthony Davis, and, you know, certainly paid off for the Lakers, you know, him and LeBron continuing to carry this team, despite, as you mentioned, you know, just basically everybody else on the team having some portion of the season that was up and some portion of the season that was down. I mean, Austin Reeves was probably the most consistent outside of LeBron and Anthony Davis just purely offensively, but certainly defensively, Reeves has had his struggles all season long. And, you know, D'Angelo Russell, again, as you mentioned, you know, getting hot towards the end of the year, but he's not exactly a defensive presence either. You know, this is a Lakers squad that ultimately managed to find their way into the playoffs, but outside of that top two, they've been, you know, very, very up and down all season long. On the flip side, I mean, you know, this Denver squad just continues to chug along. I mean, you know, after winning the title last year, they were, you know, very hot to start the year. They've been exceptional since the All-Star break. They've lost six games total since the All-Star break, which, you know, is, I don't know off the top of my head, but certainly one of, if not the best records in the league after the All-Star break. And yeah, I mean, what this team can do on both ends of the floor is truly spectacular. I mean, you mentioned Peyton Watson, who's absolutely had a breakout year for this Nuggets squad. And between him and Aaron Gordon, I mean, the athleticism and the defense at the four is just spectacular. And, you know, Michael Porter Jr., as you mentioned, you know, his family situation aside, you know, in terms of what he's been able to do on the basketball court, he's continuing to take steps forward on the defensive end as someone who looks like he might end up being one of the worst defenders in the NBA during his rookie and sophomore years. He deserves a lot of credit for the progress that he's made on the defensive end. And, of course, the two-man game between Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic continues to be one of the best in the league. And, you know, with Jokic, he's in line, if not the favorite, for being the MVP once again this season. I mean, this is a Nuggets team that won the title last year and didn't really see much of a fall-off at all. I mean, you know, they maybe could have pushed for the one seed slightly harder than they did, but they still ended up tied with the Thunder for the best record in the Western Conference. And when you look up and down this Denver roster, it's very easy to see why.
All right. So who wins in how many games and why?
I'm going to say Denver in five. I think that, you know, between LeBron and Anthony Davis, they're not going to let themselves get swept by this Denver team. But, I mean, outside of LeBron and Anthony Davis, again, this Lakers team has been so inconsistent this season. Whereas on the Nuggets side of things, I mean, you know, barring a bit of missed time from Jamal Murray due to injury, this team has been one of the healthiest in the NBA all season. You know, all of their top guys are in form and ready and raring to go for these playoffs. And, you know, between Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, and what this team can throw together defensively between Aaron Gordon and Peyton Watson, this Denver team is one of the best in the league. They continue to be after being the title winners last season. And I think it would have been hard for any team to give this Nuggets squad a push in the first round. And I think, you know, the two top line guys for the Lakers, Dan LeBron and AD, they can win a game, certainly. If they win two, I would not be particularly surprised, but I would be surprised if this series goes more than six games, and I would be shocked if it is not the Denver Nuggets emerging from this first-round series.
All right, and you heard it from me, it's Nick Agard-Johnson. You know, Nick, before we move further, Oklahoma City, Minnesota, Denver, Milwaukee, and Cleveland, and you can put Orlando in the mix as well, are the small market teams that got high seeds in the playoffs this year. And I want to ask you this question. Do you think this is the beginning of a seismic shift where we're seeing small market teams taking over? I mean, New York and L.A. and Boston, they're going to be around. But with these teams that have emerged this year in the small markets, do you think this is going to be a shift of more people paying attention to the OKCs and the Minnesotas and the Denvers and the Clevelands and the Orlandos of the world?
I would certainly hope so. I mean, those are exceptionally fun basketball teams. And in a couple of those cases, you know, specifically OKC and Orlando, you know, not only are they incredibly fun teams, but they're also incredibly young teams. And, you know, OKC and Orlando, they're already very good right now. I mean, OKC, literally the number one seed in the Western Conference, but also, I mean, basically everybody of, you know, real sort of rotation contribution, you know, most of their key rotation players are, you know, 25 or younger. I mean, these are two teams that I think are going to be mainstays of the NBA for quite a while to come. In terms of the shift towards small markets, I think it's a very interesting calculus in the sense that, you know, two of those teams really in Denver and Milwaukee in particular are teams that got, you know, their absolute superstar guys, you know, relatively late and in the draft rather than in free agency. I mean, Giannis being the 15th overall pick, you know, developing into who he's become, and, you know, clearly through every, you know, interview that you heard from Giannis, he's very committed to Milwaukee as, you know, the city and the team that chose him when he wasn't seen as this perennial MVP candidate. And, you know, on the Denver side, I mean, getting Nikola Jokic is the 41st pick, I mean, unquestionably the best second-round selection of all time. And, you know, that, I think, has allowed both of these small-market teams to build around these players that they got in the draft, you know, much later than most superstars are picked in the draft, and got guys who are very committed to the teams that were committed to them first. So I think those two teams are, you know, almost sort of exceptions in their own right. But ultimately, I think with where the NBA is at right now, you know, the draw of a Miami or a New York or Los Angeles, it's always going to be there. But a lot of these small market teams have such exceptional front offices. And, you know, in particular with, you know, a team like Denver, who, you know, a lot of their building has been through the draft or through trading for guys like Aaron Gordon, who weren't properly valued on the team that they were on. I think a lot of the growth of these small market teams is a few really smart front offices, a couple of teams that drafted superstars and got those superstars to commit to them and sort of build the rest of the teams around them. And then, you know, I think beyond that, it's just that the growth of league pass and the ability of fans to, you know, watch teams outside of their markets in a way that is more true now than it was 10 years ago, is much more true now than it was 20 years ago. I think that also enables these smaller market teams to have more success in that as long as you have a good front office, given the salary structure of the league and given how much easier it is now for young kids to be fans of players in smaller markets because they can see those players a lot more easily than they could have 20 years ago, I think there's definitely something to be said for the ability of small market teams to have more success now than they would have, you know, 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah, you definitely hit the nail on the coffin on this one, Nick. Again, big ups to, you know, you mentioned about a league pass and the cable and the satellite packages and also the internet and social media. People have more access. And of course, with regional sports networks, they've played major roles and been big factors in how small market teams been able to kind of crack the threshold in terms of being popular. And as you mentioned, the front offices have been real smart in doing their job. So thank you so much for answering that question. And you heard it from him. He is Nick Agar-Johnson. He is the host of the No Ceilings NBA Deep Dives podcast, and he's the editor-in-chief and writer for No Ceilings NBA and co-host of the Kings Weekly podcast. Nick, as always, thank you so much. Tell everybody where they can find you on social media, as well as No Ceilings NBA and Kings Weekly, and any websites. Let the listeners know that as well.
So, yeah, you can find me on Twitter at NBA Johnson. All of my work goes up there, whether it be Kings Weekly or No Ceilings or podcasts or interviews with people like Ed. So that will all go up on my Twitter feed, No Ceilings, NoCeilingsNBA.com, and No Ceilings NBA on social. And then Kings Weekly at Kings Weekly Pod on Twitter. And you can find us in Spotify or wherever else you might get your podcasts.
All right, you heard it from him. He's Nick Agar-Johnson. He's the host of the No Ceilings NBA Deep Dives podcast, and editor-in-chief and writer for No Ceilings NBA, and the co-host of the Kings Weekly podcast covering the NBA's Sacramento Kings. As always, Nick, thank you so much, my man. If ever you want to come back on, feel free to let us know.
Absolutely, Ed. Thanks so much, as always, for having me, and looking forward to hopefully coming back on the show to talk more playoffs before the season wraps up.
All right, awesome. And until next time, everybody, I'm Ed Robinson saying so long, and you take care.
Modern life is noisy. Noise is everywhere. Excessive noise is harmful, linked to sleep deprivation, hearing loss, and heart disease. Should noise be the price we pay for progress? Actually, no. Many noise sources have quieter options. Gas-powered landscaping equipment is obsolete, with battery-powered options greatly reducing noise and air pollution. Audible car alarms are obsolete, with vehicle immobilizers and GPS tracking providing silent anti-theft technologies. Quieter backup warning sounds are available, and adjustable directional sounds are less intrusive. So what can you do to reduce noise levels? Talk to store and building managers about safe sound levels. Work with elected officials and the police to strengthen noise enforcement. Join Noise Free America, a coalition to promote quiet.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be present in Louisiana. Select parishes only. Licensee partner, Amelia Belle Casino. Terms and conditions apply. At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be present in Louisiana. Select parishes only. Licensee partner, Amelia Belle Casino.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ruben Patel with Patient Plus Urgent Care. These days, it can be hard to find the time and money to take care of yourself. We're here to help with our new Urgent Care membership. Starting at $20 a month, the same as your car wash membership, visit any of our locations for that scratchy throat, runny nose, fever, chills, or any injury. Visit patientplusuc.com/membership for more information. patientplusuc.com/membership.
How powerful is Cox Internet? Powerful enough to let your band members in Vegas, Phoenix, and Rhode Island jam like you're all in the same garage. Get gig speeds powered by fiber from Cox. It's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, always building better. Download speeds up to 1 gigabit per second. Cox internet is powered by fiber and connected to the premises via coaxial cable. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms and other restrictions may apply.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be present in Louisiana. Select parishes only. Licensee partner, Amelia Belle Casino.